Hi, Pamela. Let's try again. Take, I don't know how many. Take 11, it seems like.
There.
Pretty close. I think we're going to call this a Baker's Podcast. I think.
Because we've
think
had to try so many times?
Because we had to go so many times. Jeez, this thing is painful. I'm going to assume that it's so weird. Like, when we start to record the call, everything seems fine. I can record it for 10 or 15 seconds and check it, and it's fine. It seems to be fine at, like, the half-an-hour mark, 45-minute mark. But when I finalize the file on my other computer, it's messed up. So either there's something specifically wrong with that computer and Pamela, or I'm not sure what's wrong. So I'm going back to my old recording machine with my old mic, so if we sound a little different...
It's his fault.
It's my fault. Totally my bad.
Don't ever blame me.
I mean, you're no longer disconnecting every 2 minutes, so that's about as good as we can get it.
That's because
on your side.
I upgraded back down to Windows 8.1.
I mean, you know, some computers, I guess, just don't like Windows 10. I thought my computer liked Windows 10, except apparently we got to record exactly one show that sounded good in there. Anyway, I'm Samus. He's Travis. This is our second and a half time to record this podcast, I think.
Because we just hate everything.
And we're terrible people. We're terrible podcasters. The only reason why we do this show is because you guys listen, and we deeply, deeply appreciate it. Once again, I wanted to apologize for last week's show. Thought it was better to get something out other than nothing, and I'm not sure if that's true. I got several comments that... the content on the show was amazing, but it took the sheer power and force of will for people to get through the show with that incessant flapping.
Well, I appreciate them that much more than.
I do, too. I appreciate every one of you. This week's title for Reels is Baker's Playset. We wanted to talk about it last week, or I should say Travis did, and we're going to talk about it this week. And then subtitles are werewolves beatable, specifically in draft. And we're going to talk about a little bit of the mindset with the drafting environment right after these troll cards of the week. This week's troll cards are Tainted Remedy and Thing in the Ice. Travis, in 5 minutes or less, tell me about your troll card of the week and why you picked it this week.
Well, I picked Tainted Remedy simply because of Triskaidekaphobia.
Your favorite card
out of
the new
this set is that. So, on Monday we drafted. I happened to get pretty good packs. I did get Triskaidekaphobia in one of them. And so I obviously had to play it.
Clearly. Yeah, no brainer. No options.
No options. I couldn't build around anything else. That's just the law. And I thought, you know... what would make this card better if I could gain life while they simultaneously lost life? So I remembered that Tainted Remedy was still in play, or still in rotation. So go with the first ability, you know, as long as Tainted Remedy's on the field, and just each player gains one life, except they wouldn't anymore.
Right. So, we kind of were kicking things around, and how exactly is some of these things worded? Like, if I jump over and look for standard black sorceries, that new sorcery spell, does it say target player gains life? Or just you gain life?
You gain life. Chaplain's Blessing, I assume that's the one you're talking about?
Let's go with that one, yeah.
Okay, well, Chaplain's Blessing is... a single white mana sorcery.
I thought it was a black one.
No.
Okay.
And it just says you gain 5 life.
So is it feasible then to use like aims or Alms of the Vein, where target opponent loses 3 life and you gain 3 life, that spell, the spell from, Origins, where you gain a bunch of life and draw a card.
See, that one is actually feasible. because that one says target player gains 4 life, and you draw a card.
Okay.
So that one...
What's Tainted Remedy actually say? What's the wording on that?
Tainted Remedy says, if an opponent would gain life, that player loses that much life instead.
Okay, so it's not whenever you gain life, they lose. Then I was thinking it was. So, basically, you have less things that kind of do what I was thinking you could do, so you really can't gain life yourself and burn your opponent out. However, I mean, you still have those, you know, a 3-mana life swing spell, theoretically, in black.
Right.
This Tainted Remedy, the Trichodicophobia. Trichodicophobia.
You know, that's as close as you've gotten to it, so I will allow it.
Trichodicophobia. Basically, I'm trying to say trick your dick into a phobia. Trick your dick into a phobia.
I've had enough alcohol to know that won't work.
But, I don't know. I think that. And then we ran into this pretty sweet Demonic Pact deck that kind of makes me wonder if you couldn't, with a little bit of changing here and a little bit of changing there, if you couldn't squeeze it, squeeze in those cards into, like, a pack deck and go more, like, really interesting black-white removal kind of situations, capping out like a Sorin. So even if you can't win with the Trick Your Dick into a Phobia, you can use that to apply a lot of pressure, you know, get them to hurt themselves essentially below 13,
right,
and then kind of move into burnout range as quick as you can after that. With things like Sorin and Starfield of Nyx to bring him back, and Demonic Pack and sacrifice effects like Angelic Purge.
Right, and honestly, that'd probably be a deck that I have to work on for later, so that way I can get the new black-white removal spell.
Oh, yeah, the Anguished Unmaking?
Yeah, that one. You know, get that and more of the Angelic Purges and all that other stuff. So that way I wouldn't lose to my own pact.
Trichodicophobia?
Well, no, that doesn't bother me.
Oh, the pact? Yeah, like you said, I think with Angelic Purge, being able to sacrifice basically any permanent to do that, I think is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's another couple of spells to sacrifice a permanent. Not necessarily even spells, but ways to, like, do some work with it. Probably some boomerang spells.
I mean, you could splash red.
Well, if you're going to splash, you would clearly splash green.
Well, no.
For Jamoka's command.
Well, the deck is already black, white, and green, but I could also...
I don't know if you need it to be green. I think you get away with just black, white.
Well, yeah. Well, see, I was also going up with Herald of the Pantheon.
Oh, I like this idea.
Enchantments cost one less, and whenever you cast an enchantment, gain one life.
I do like that idea.
Tainted Remedy, Trichodicophobia, Demonic Pact, The Retreats.
Oh, I love it. It sounds great. We'll have to put together a deck list in a week or two and see what we can do with it. That could be something that I'd be willing to invest in for Standard on Magic Online.
Yeah. But see, I was thinking, you know, Splash Red, because they have this nifty new Planeswalker that can exile an enchantment.
Seems like a stretch. I think you're better off just having ways to sacrifice it. I mean, if you have 4 Jamoka's commands, or Dramica's commands, and 4 Angelic Purges, like, that's...
enough.
Main deck, that's 8 ways to deal with your 4 packs.
Yeah. Plus something else.
Yeah, the biggest problem would be with Starfield of Nyx. You know, you have 1 or 2 of those to bring the pack back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would be an issue. I don't know, maybe not. But, I mean, if you essentially think of the deck as a black-white burn control list, then you get some real interesting options.
Oh, yeah.
And then... like I said, the version I'm looking at right now that we will have up in the show notes, or at least a link to the show notes, looks very, very interesting to me. It took 33rd place at the Standard Open last weekend, I guess. And I don't know, I really like a lot of what this deck is doing. I think there's some things that are not right, but
again, it was the first week.
It is the first week, but I think if you were to put in the trichodicophobias and potentially the tainted remedies and go a little crazy with it, I don't really see the reason for the blue at all in this deck. I think it's a black-white deck splashing green for a handful of cards.
Yeah.
If you do go the route that we kind of talked about before, with the really strong enchantment theme, then you really want even more things like Angelic Purges, because they do double duty.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think it would be interesting. We'll have to look at it. And like I said, it is potentially an area that I'm willing to invest a little money for Magic Online to play, because that's one of the things that I need to be doing right now, which we'll talk about in a little bit. My troll card this week is Thing in the Ice, and specifically because of it trolled me in the draft. One of the things that Travis and I kind of discussed on the show that is lost forever is that blue is probably the weakest color in this draft format. It seems like green is very, very solid. So much so that Travis wanted to, you know, put our Werewolves Beatable in the as the subtitle of the show. So that's a nice change that green is not the weakest color automatically every time.
Right.
But it does put you in some weird position with these double face cards. And even when you open something so strong as a Thing in the Ice, you still have to have the rest of the packs be able to support it. So I first picked a Thing in the Ice, showed my packs off to, you know, all your double face cards like you have to do now because of double face cards. And I took my Thing in the Ice because it was $12 and passed my pack and proceeded to see no blue cards that really held my interest at all. Thanks, dogs. Keep going if you're going to bark. If you're not going to bark anymore, be quiet. So yeah, and I ended up moving into a white green deck because I thought it was very good, and I just kept getting past all this really solid removal and the interesting creatures that I thought I could make do some interesting tricks, including your surprise best card from last week. Is it Spirit Guardians?
Yes.
I got past one of those, and I thought, okay, well, nobody else apparently is in this green-white deck. Well, to kind of get into our subtitle topic, a player about four seats down from me opened a Werewolf as his dual face card and took it and basically signaled to the players on both sides of him, I'm going to move into the Werewolf deck. And he, I don't think, got very many actual Werewolves. But he did get some, and neither people on his right or to his left wanted to fight him for the green cards. So, realistically, only he and I were drafting green at our table because, you know, a little ways upstream, he basically marked his territory with his first couple of picks of face-up cards, and everybody knew what he was in. And I think that is what makes specifically Werewolves so strong in this format, because unless you're the person feeding that player, or maybe one seat up from that player, there's nobody else at that table that can really get away with challenging him on Werewolves once he's kind of called dibs.
Right.
Because there's not enough Werewolves to support two players playing Werewolves, but there is always going to be one player that's going to like basically claim it and say, all right, are we fighting for it or not?
And even then, like, it's kind of a weird thing to have one player out of the entire draft format, you know, that entire table's like, all right, I'm doing this, anyone going to stop me?
Right.
And so the entire table knows exactly what that person is doing, and unless
it could be a feint, right? Like, it could be a feint. Where the person is like,
stop me.
You know, I'm gonna take this first one, so neither one of my opponents are on this color, or maybe it's gonna force my opponent upstream to try to deal with it, and really I'm not in this color at all. I'm just setting a tempo pick that I don't know how true it is. I think there's a lot of meta stuff involved. I'm very much looking forward to this first Pro Tour of the season. I'm one of those guys who really learns how to do my drafting by watching other people draft.
I just learned by doing.
Yeah, see, and that's fine. Like, I usually can muddle through the first couple of drafts okay, but you've seen me draft. Me, before watching a couple of the pros kind of hit it, and me after, you know, watching a couple and doing a couple, like, my skill level doubles easily. I go from a fine drafter to one of the best drafters at our location, with just a little bit of extra input. You know, watch four or five drafts or do four or five drafts. Like, that's really where it kind of ticks over for me. But this is a new thing that I haven't experienced before, is these dual face or these dual cards, and how that affects the meta of the draft format. It's going to be an interesting learning experience for me. Let's see. I have a note in here about being Jedi mind tricked. Basically, we had a win a box on the release day, like we always do at the arena. And so if you're in Central Kansas and you'd like to join us for a win-a-box, every release Thursday we always do a win-a-box. And I was playing what basically mounted up to the finals, because the guy ended up they drew in the next round. But it really didn't matter because they were going to draw regardless kind of situation. So really it came down to, you know, if I could beat this guy, I would have been in the finals in the position to scoop, but I just would have punished the opponent. The opponent was in a Tarka red, which my deck is actually set up to beat every time, where the guy that I actually lost to was not. But anyway, turn three, game one, or turn four, game one, I played a Read the Bones and adjusted my life total. And my opponent goes, I was adjusting my life to him, my opponent goes, "Are you done?" And I said, "Yes." And I missed my land drop. And that's gotten me now twice in two different tournaments where I didn't get that land drop and I ended up losing that game. This is the first time it's cost me the match, but I was playing against one of the top players in the store where if you make a mistake like that, he's going to get you. So I just want to kind of point out that these Jedi mind tricks that you hear about, they're real. They're very real. And if you are prompted by your opponent to do anything,
don't
stop. Stop, pause, think about it for a second, and don't do it. And I was talking with my opponent about it because we're pretty reasonable friends. And he's like, "Yeah, I didn't think I was going to catch you with that mind trick." And I'm like, "That's fine. You know, not the end of the world." So I started using one of the tricks that I do. And one of the tricks I do is, especially when I know some of my opponent's cards, is I start calling the game, announcing the game out loud. Like, what's going to happen? You know, I'll be like, "All right, untap, unkeep, Kulligan's command, make me discard a card, regrow your Siege Rhino." And that's what he did. But I was at 5 life. So if he would have regrew his Siege Rhino and shocked me, he could have played his Siege Rhino and won the game. But since I kind of put him in that mental scenario where I was basically dictating the game to him, that's what he did. So there's a lot of these Jedi mind tricks out there. The classic, you know, from ages is when somebody's getting ready to attack and you pick up your pin, right? Like, if you pick up your pin, you're signaling, kind of subconsciously signaling, that you don't plan to block. And then that's when you can put your pin back down and play, like, a surprise blocker or a removal spell or something that basically tricks them into making a move first. That's one of the classic Jedi mind tricks. If you have Jedi mind tricks that you're willing to share, please email us at the2trollsbrew@gmail.com. Or tweet us. I'm Samus Garobo. He is Travis319. Or Turtle Power. Sorry. Holy shnikes. Turtle Power 319. And we would love to hear what these other Jedi mind tricks are. Because I think that's an excellent way. Excuse me, little wiener dog. Are you done? I'm just trying to have a podcast here.
I exist.
Yeah. Hold me, I need your attention. I think that's a good way to troll your opponents and a good way to get them on tilt, which, you know, is the whole thing. So we spent a lot of time, probably a little bit more than necessary, talking about a thing that I'm going to start doing for new players at the arena, where we have these common slash uncommon decks basically sitting around for new players. Specifically, the arena here is right on the verge of being able to upgrade player level. And what that kind of amounts to is we need to get just a few more new players into the fluctuation, into the rotation. But at the same time, everybody should be aiming to get the Magic community to grow. You never know when you're going to find somebody who's, you know, has the twist on the game that really heightens your local community or even your, you know, your long-term Magic career, if that's what you're looking forward to. And the two ways that you can most easily retain new players is by giving them cards and a place to start, and then also playing with them and being encouraging why they're making the initial baby step mistakes, right?
Yep.
So one of the things that I'm specifically doing this week, and I'll be doing in the near future, is putting together these common decks. The general, it doesn't have to all be made out of commons. Or you can even throw rares in there if you like. But the general idea is to have a deck in, like, say, standard. That's where I'm kind of building right now. Where if you were to give it away to a new player, you would be out absolutely nothing of value in your mind, because you're easily picking up a new player to add to the community for that cost. So, for example, I put together a quick red deck here that uses Insolent Neonate, which is the 1-mana, 1/1, sacrifice him, discard a card, draw a new card. Borderline Marauder, Majoring Bully, Sanguine Mage, Blood Mad Vampire, that's the Madness Vampire, to kind of go with our discard outlet guy here. Rush of Adrenaline and Titan Strength for some pump spells. A Tormenting Voice for some more discard outlets with the Blood Mad Vampire. And Fiery Tempers. So together, this whole deck is made up of it's 20 creatures, 20 spells. My other spell is Mage Smart Gambit. So basically, it's 40 commons and then 20 mountains. This whole deck, according to MTG Goldfish, right now on paper, which I believe is using the Fiery Temper cost, or at least it was when I took a picture of this deck, was $6. I will not lose any sleep over $6,
especially to help
get in to get a new player into the Magic community. I have absolutely no issues with that at all, and I kind of challenged Travis a little bit on coming up with a version of his own, and he did. And I think it's a little bit more complicated than I would think for a brand new player. But if it's a player who's maybe played a couple of games of Commander or something and has the basic rules under their belt, I think it's got some synergy, and it does a good job of showing off the depth of black, specifically in Magic. So you want to give us an idea what this thing looks like?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like you said, it is a little bit more complicated. But it's also slower. I'll start with the creatures, which have 16 creatures, 4 Dutiful Attendants, that is the 1/2 for 3 mana, that whenever it dies, return another creature from your graveyard to your hand. And I have 4 Return Centaurs, which, that one, when it comes in, target player mills the top 4 cards of their library.
And you got to remember to tell the players that they probably want to hit themselves with this deck, right?
Yes, yes. This deck it's more graveyard-based than anything, which, I mean, it's swamped, so it's kind of...
I mean, again, with a simple note of, hey, you want to mill your own cards,
yeah.
So when this thing dies, you're essentially drawing the best card out of your library.
Right.
I mean, most people, I think, would figure that out pretty quickly. Yeah.
And then 4 Stallion of Ashmouth. That's the 4 drop 3/3. When you have Delirium, you can pay a colorless and a black to give it +1/+1 till end of turn. And 4 Undead Servants. That one is, when it enters the battlefield, put a 2/2 zombie for each other undead servant in the graveyard. So that's where the, you know, self-mill comes in.
Well, I will say that this converted mana cost is very, very high.
Yeah.
I hope you have this thing completely loaded out with removal spells.
Well, speaking of removal spells, I have 4 Deadweight.
Oh, is that your way of saying, yeah, it's full of removal spells?
Full of removal spells. I have 4 Deadweights. That's the enchantment that gives the enchanted creature -2/-2. Grasp of Darkness, giving creature -4/-4. Murderous Compulsion, destroy target tap creature. Reeve Soul, destroy target creature with power 3 or less. And Tar Snare, giving target creature -3/-2. Then I also have a draw engine, which is Merciless Resolve, where that's out of Shadows, where you pay 3 mana, and you sacrifice either a creature or a land, and draw 2 cards. So if you have that creature in your graveyard that you want, and you have Dutiful Attendant, you can sacrifice the Dutiful Attendant to get back the creature from your graveyard to your hand, and then draw 2 cards.
See, I think this is a pretty good example of exactly the kind of thing that we're talking about, right? Like, if you're a new player and you're playing a deck and you kind of figure it out and you kind of like it, this is one of those things that you could easily, I don't want to say fall for, but kind of fall for, like, as an overall theme, right? Like, this shows off a really interesting mechanic in the your graveyard also matters.
Yeah.
Where, like, my deck, the one that I put together, was relatively straightforward aggro, like trying to be aggressive, trying to go there. So if you find somebody who was attracted to that style of play, it would be very easy to just give them this deck. Again, what's this thing probably cost? Like, whole $5?
Yeah, I think on TCG it was like at $7. Or on MTG Goldfish it was like $7 for paper, which, and these are all commons and uncommons. I think if you take out the Grasp of Darkness, that drops it by $4.
So, I mean, right there, it's just stuff that, the general idea is, when you're drafting each week, if you pick up some of these better commons and uncommons, and kind of save them from draft to draft, maybe you have a box at the shop that you say, hey, these are your above average commons and uncommons, and basically kind of set things aside where somebody could go through every once in a while and put together an up-to-date standard list or whatever, that you can just give the new player when they show up and be like, hey, you know, you're new to Magic. Here's a deck already kind of put together, a little better than what you're going to get from Wizards. It doesn't have any rares or anything cool. But you're welcome to, like, you know, if you're willing to spend a little bit of money, you can walk over to the bulk box or wherever your shop keeps their miscellaneous rares. And, you know, for a couple of bucks, you could add a little bit of power probably to these decks. And everybody has an extremely low investment. It just costs you a little bit of time, and the goodwill that you can earn to a new player is really, really huge. And, you know, why this isn't specifically a trolling thing, I think as soon as you get somebody, like, latched onto the teat of Magic the Gathering, then you can start to troll them really hard.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend everyone kind of give this a shot, give this a go. Again, it's something that I'm going to really start focusing on in my own shop. Not just with the, you know, this drive that we have to kind of grow the shop with the new player community in particular right now. Our competitive guys are starting to get a little more competitive than we would like again. Not coming to Friday Night Magics kind of, I don't want to say shutting down new players, but kind of not being the most encouraging to them. So I want to go out of our way as the local game shop to start encouraging those new players even more than we normally do, because they really are the lifeblood of every shop. You know, you're going to get a lot of players who become kind of grizzled, like, oh, well, I'll just buy the rares that I need, you know, for my deck or whatever, and I'll pick up the commons and uncommons when I draft or whatever. But somebody's got to buy those boxes, or the store doesn't stay open, and you won't have any place to play. No one's going to hold. There's be no one to host a tournament if those boxes don't move, those singles don't move, stuff like that. So, you know, you really have to have that casual base to keep the stores going, at least for some of these smaller town stores. Let's see. The other thing that we have on the list here, something I wanted to talk about a bunch, was these Dual Decks StarCraft Edition. So what we have here is a PDF, and I'll be sure to get that linked into the show notes. But you have this PDF, I think it was 22 pages long, where someone has taken the time to build a theme deck based off of the StarCraft video game series. Which Travis mentioned he never played StarCraft before, so we had to like roll back to Warcraft.
Yeah.
Right? It's a very similar kind of game, except this one's set up in outer space. The races would be Zerg and Protoss and Terran. And in fact, the term Zerging, like when you run through a quest or you run through a venture or you try to just race for the first kind of kill, is a concept that actually comes from this particular video game, I believe, to Zerg, because you would, with the Zerg race, you could put together a weenie rush very, very quickly, very, very early, and sometimes if your opponent was not on the ball, they could be overwhelmed by this Zergling rush, hence the Zerg rush. I don't know. I thought it to be a very well designed set, very interesting to play. If I printed this up and sleeved this up, Travis, you would totally play with me when you came to visit, right?
Yeah, I could always give it a shot.
I mean, and a lot of interesting cards, a lot of very flavorful cards for the set. I remember I don't have it up right now on this particular computer, unfortunately. But I remember that we had talked about the Siege Cannon as a card.
Right.
So it's a 5/5 for a red, a white, and 2 mana. That does not untap on your attacks, does not untap during your untap step. But it has an unmorph cost of Boros colors, white and a red. And then at the end of your turn, you may turn it face down. You may basically morph it, as it were. So the principle in that in the video game is this is a very powerful unit that when it drives around, let's say it attacks it, 20% or 30% of its max power, but if you can set up into a stationary position, your power is really amplified, and it becomes one of the better units in the game, specifically for ground attacks. Hence the reason it turns into this 5/5, but it can't move anywhere. It doesn't untap. So if you need it on the defensive line, then you leave it untapped. You know what I mean? It is a very thematic card. There's a lot of those in this particular set. There's also, I think it was called Nuclear Strike, where I started, you know, I talked about in StarCraft, on your home base, you can build a nuclear silo. And then for a pretty hefty investment, I think of like 200 of each mineral and gas, which are your two resources in this video game, you can build a nuke. And then you get a special unit that runs around and shoots a laser where you want to point it. And it takes about 15 seconds for it to launch, and it takes about another 15 to 20 seconds for it to actually get to where it's going and blow up what you're pointing at. And everybody hears when the missile actually takes off, everyone hears nuclear launch detected. And everyone goes into panic mode and starts searching all over their map to see if there's this little red dot blinking on their screen showing them that somebody is shooting a nuclear weapon at them. Well, this is an enchantment, I believe, for double white and two. that enchants a permanent, and then during your upkeep, you sacrifice the enchantment, and it blows up the permanent it's equipping, and or the permanent that it's equipped to, or enchanted. There you go, enchanted. And then it blows up everything else that has the same converted mana cost. So if you enchant a token, boom, blows up all tokens, something at one, etc. A non-land. And it just is so flavorful and plays so well with how the game goes out. I think it'll be a very fun experiment to play that. It's a lot of cards to print out and cut out and sleeve, but I think it's worth it. And they're all dual decks. So basically they're set up to play against one another. And I don't know. I just, thematically, I love it. I would love to see more games like this kind of mashed up. I'd like to see like a Diablo World kind of situation. I'd love to see TV shows set up like this. I'd love to see just fantastical universes matched up, like perhaps the Star Wars universe and a Star Wars universe where they're both kind of put together. I think that would make an interesting battle deck. And I think that you could really get people excited about making their own cards or, you know, working towards these different themed decks that, you know, are unofficial. I know the Booze Cube is very popular online, if you can find it. I think if you just search Booze Cube, it's a magic set all based around drinking and taking drinks in a social setting and stuff. It's like a party Magic the Gathering variant. It's all pretty exciting. What else do we want to talk about this week, Travis? I know I'm kind of just blowing through stuff here, but I've got to go to the gym. Plus, we already talked about all this stuff
right
twice.
Well, yeah, this is our second time talking about it, and I don't know. I really hope your computer decides to cooperate.
Me too. I hope we get this show out this week. It would be really awesome. Somehow, we spent a lot of time discussing this Turbo Fog list that I've been playing online. I've been playing this budgeted Turbo Fog list. It's got, it's not super budget, but it's immediately budget. I'm running like 15 or 16 fog effects, I think. Ethereal Haze, Holy Day, Angel Song, Dawn Charm, and one Pollen Lullaby. So that would be 17.
Okay.
Then it runs Dictator Crucifix, Temple Bell, Howling Mine for our additional draw effects. Four Sphinx's Tutelages as our main win condition. Two Supreme Verdicts as our kind of catch back up spell. And one Gideon Jura, which I don't think I care for in this list. I almost always sideboard it out for something. The mana is kind of weak. I would like to adjust the mana a little bit. I think it really needs something like Isochron Scepter to replace a Howling Mine and a really sweet utility spell, something that can remove that can do something awesome and draw a card. Do you have any suggestions, Travis?
I mean,
this is where I'm prompting you to bring up the same discussion you brought up yesterday, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name of the card. Azorius Charm.
Azorius Charm. There you go.
Because, I don't know, I just feel giving your opponents the opportunity to draw an answer is... I've always disliked it, but at the same time, sure, you are trying to mill them.
The thing that I don't like about Howling Mine specifically in this deck is they draw first.
Right, and then they may have a chance to get rid of your...
Right, before you can draw.
Right.
Where something like Temple Bell, you can kind of control when they draw. And, of course, Dictator Crucifix, you could flash in at the end of their turn. Doesn't mean they can't stop it. Doesn't mean they can't counter it or whatever. But it reduces likelihood. So you at least get that first draw.
Right.
Usually. Almost always. Where Howling Mine... you don't get that option. You play it. They almost always draw first, and then they take, if they can blow it up, they blow it up. Where if you could, you know, now granted, on turn two, Howling Mind's a lot better on turn two than, say, Isochron Scepter, Holy Day.
Right.
But, you know, it's all good.
Or, I mean, even Isochron Scepter and Silence.
Isochron Scepter and Silence.
Isochron
Scepter and Azorius Charm would be really good, I think.
Isochron Scepter and Dark Depth or Dash Hopes.
Dash Hopes. Like, there's a lot of interesting cards that could go in this. I think Isochron Scepter is a really powerful card. I'd really like to have something that basically said, you know, like Fog or Fog one creature and draw a card, which is where we kind of come up with the idea of Azorius Charm. And I think that kind of fits the slots, basically what I'm talking about exactly. The only other one that may even be better would be the Izzet Charm, because it can remove a creature, it can draw two cards and discard two cards, and you could potentially counter a spell.
Right.
So, I mean, all of its modes are active. Most of the Azorius Charm's modes are active. Dromica's Command, I think, would be okay if you could, you know, if you had the money for the fetch lands. I think it could be really good. I don't know. I do like this deck. I think it's a good one for Magic Online. At least it is for me. Because basically, other than the red decks, specifically the very, very aggressive red decks, I haven't had a problem. I think I'm pretty far up in the good category. Of course, I just play in the practice rooms, right? I'm currently haven't found a deck that I love so much in Modern that I'm willing to risk my play points to try to start building my play points pool back up.
Or your money.
Or my money. So I'll just wait patiently for a standard deck that I really want to invest in that I like. But this is very close, I think. I think that
I'm telling you, I'm gonna get that deck for you with Triskaidekaphobia.
And that could be it. I don't know. Like I said, I'm all about finding something that that wins reasonably and yet can put your opponent on a tilt to help push the game through. The other card that I really want in this deck, hopefully the price will fall on it now that it is no longer needed in a lot of the decks, is the Painter Servant.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes, and when it comes into play, you name its color, all spells and all libraries, everything becomes that color. So the way that Sphinx's Tulagus is worded, if you hit a non-land card that shares a color, repeat the process, you can keep going. So even if you play Sphinx's Tulagus, they don't answer it. The next turn, you play this guy, name, say, blue or whatever. It doesn't really matter. It could matter in certain situations, I'm sure, but for the most part, it doesn't matter. And then you activate something like a Temple Bell. You could just set off a really huge chain of milling. Like, I realize it's a couple of cards, but even without it, Sphinx's Tulagus with a couple of draws can really get put some hurt on the opponents. But if you could just something to just push it that last little bit over, I think it'll be great. I don't know. Like I said, I think the two things I need to focus on primarily, though, are red decks, especially for Magic Online.
Or at least beating them.
To be able to beat them, exactly. And we have two disenchants in the sideboard. I'm assuming that's what these are for. But Eidolon of the Great Revels?
Yeah.
That's a real Magic the Gathering card. That's a very real Magic the Gathering card, especially in Modern, where, you know, and against my deck in particular, I have exactly three spells in this deck that cost more than more than three mana. And it hurts.
Yeah.
It's a beating. So.
I told you about timely reinforcements for the red decks, right?
You did suggest that. I think it would be okay. The problem would be, especially against something like a Eidolon, would be, because it's a sorcery, so I'm gaining three, or I'm gaining six, and putting 3-1-1s into play, and then at the same time, I'm giving them a target for a lot of their removal spells that they may not be able to sideboard all out of. Things like, I'm sure they got most of them sideboarded out. But that, like, all I can think is Searing Blood, but that's not the one that's really popular. The other one is really popular, but I can't. Searing Blaze, maybe?
Yeah, the 2-drop landfall one.
Yeah, the landfall one.
Yeah.
Like, they're both 2-drops, but the ones that, like, remove a creature and then burn me, like, it gives you an opportunity for those. And then, if they have an Eidolon down on the field, you're paying 3 mana, making some guys, and you're still getting punched in the face right back. So it may not give you as much as you need. I'm not sure what the answer is. I would like to figure it out. It may be one of those situations where you just have to go 3 colors for, like, the Izzet Charm.
Right.
So you can just shoot it when it comes out. But I don't know. I really like it. Saffron has a pretty in-depth article here. I might tweet him and see what he suggests for the, if you're going to put a little bit of money into it, and how to best deal with the red decks. In his moneyed version, he's got 2 Brereton Forge Tenders instead of just the 1, and he's got 4 Leyline of Sanctities, which those 5 cards might make the difference. Because if they can't target with their burn spells, then they're just down to the creatures to target or to attack you. And you could probably get through with that with the fog effects if you're only taking 2 from the creature in those kind of situations. But, yeah, helpful. I don't know. It is still a real challenge, I think. I don't know, but I like it. I think it's a good one for me to kind of fiddle with some more. And is there any deck more trolly than a mill deck?
One without a win condition.
That's true, but I don't think I could just go on forever with this deck. I think to be able to go on forever, you would have to really make some changes. You'd have to run, like, more Elixirs of Immortality. You'd have to run more draw spells. Like, we discussed possibly Sphinx's Revolution.
Yep.
Like, as a 1-of or 2-of in this deck.
Yeah, just to draw and gain life.
Just to draw and gain the life to kind of buy the extra turns. You might have to have something like that. I don't know. But then, since a lot of these burn decks now run, you know, 5 to 6 counter spells in the sideboard, you know, you could be in real trouble that way, too. I don't know. I do like it. I did enjoy it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I play Magic on streams on Tuesday mornings at twitch.tv/SamusRobo. Almost always budget-friendly decks because I'm poor. And here, relatively soon, I'll be investing in at least 1 budget standard deck, if not a couple budget standard decks. And then I'll probably throw a little bit of money into this this mill deck, the Sphinx's Tutelage deck, just to kind of try to make it go the distance. Because I'd really like to have something that's good and modern for those times when standard is kind of dry. Like, I had a real problem for the last couple of weeks playing on Magic Online during my normal stream times. And I don't know if this ever really affects you, Travis, or not. And we have a few minutes, so we can get into it a little bit. But when the format starts to change, at least here at my local shop, and definitely on Magic Online, nobody cares about standard anymore. For about 1.5, 2 weeks, sometimes even 3 weeks before a new set, nobody cares about standard at all.
Right, they just kind of push it to the side.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this doesn't matter anymore. I'm like, you've still got weeks left. You still have lots of time.
Right.
Why are we hating on this so bad? And it's just, I don't know, I've never understood that. I said, even I played in a win-a-box up into the day of the release. You know, the winner of that win a box got a box of the Shadows, basically when it came out. Like you, I still love it. I think it's a great format. Even all the way up there, when people declare something as dead, I really kind of, is it really?
Right.
I don't understand it. But it's really the case for Magic Online. And it really hit me on Magic Online because I waited for games forever. And finally I was just like, forget it. It's a Magic day. I'm just going to sleep in. Or I'm just going to play a different game. I don't understand. And unfortunately, I hear that this same principle is coming to Hearthstone with the rotation for Standard. Or the equivalent of Standard. So it's going to be kind of a pain.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that mentality becomes an issue. Of the, oh, why do I bother with this format
right.
anymore?
I don't know. Me, personally, I always see new combos and things. So it's kind of just, for me, it's always brewing.
Speaking of always brewing, does Declare It in Stone hit non-permanent or non-creature permanents, or does it only hit permanents or creature permanents?
What color is it?
It's white. Declare in Stone or Decree in Stone or something like that. I'm trying to find
Declaration in Stone. Exile target creature and all of the creatures.
Just a creature.
Yeah.
I was thinking that would be an interesting way to get rid of your pack. Your demonic pact. Like, oh, I'm exiling this and any other demonic packs I may have on the field. Oh, and I'm going to get a clue for each one that I got rid of?
Yeah,
I guess with the Starfield of Nyx, that would work.
Yeah, that'd be ridiculous.
So, anyway. What's left?
So,
what's left on these?
You'd have to have Starfield of Nyx and four other enchantments in order to get potentially one clue.
Well, I'm not worried about the clue. I'm more worried about having removal spells that could potentially keep you from losing the game with your demonic pact.
When you put it that way,
yeah,
that's all right.
That's what I'm thinking. That's my thought process anyway. I don't know. I also felt like we had a challenge that we were discussing, but I didn't write it down in the show notes. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
The only thing that I remember is
we challenging each other to something.
I think it was more or less just a challenge for building a common / uncommon deck and taking it to an FNM.
Oh yeah, doing an El Cheapo list.
Yeah.
And this is a good challenge for everybody, I think, to understand what it's like to play in a situation where you're very low budget. And a Friday Night Magic tends to be pretty low entry, low cost to get into. And it could really be an excellent brewing exercise. Right? Like, don't set yourself a monetary value necessarily, but you basically want to set something that says, okay, I'm not going to go over, you know, like
$15.
Yeah, but again, like I said, I didn't necessarily want to do a monetary cost. More of a, if I accidentally drop this in the toilet while I'm playing, eh.
Will I care?
Yeah, exactly. That being said, I can't find three of my Jaces, and I'm a little like my new flip Jaces. I'm like, huh, I wonder where those went. Like, I know I got them back from Hunter, but I cannot find them. I want them. I'm working on another deck that needs them, and I can't find them. I can only find one.
That's crappy.
Yeah, it's real bad. So, same kind of thing, though, right? Like, don't, you know, none of these cards really matter.
Especially Jace.
especially Jace. I was referring to the deck of this challenge.
Oh, right, that thing.
It's easy to like put something together, but again, something in such a way where, you know, if a new player shows up and needs a deck, you're just ready to hand them a deck and say, here you go, bro.
Right.
Or here you go, sis, to be non-gender douchebaggery about it.
Right, exactly.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good idea. I think it's an interesting challenge for us all to kind of take on. Because each one of us is the ambassador for the community. And we can't be trolls to them until after they're already hooked, or otherwise they just go away.
Right.
And we need them to help fatten up the prize pools.
Yeah. And we also need more victims.
That's right.
I mean,
who,
victories.
People have to appreciate our foul jokes.
Yes.
And our sick trolls. All right. Well, Travis, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to either pull up the Would You Rather webpage or figure out some other game, because that's what we did yesterday.
Yeah.
While I quickly here run through where you can find us. You can find this podcast at samusgarobo.com, along with my very sporadic writing now that we started podcasting and I started streaming every day. Holy geez, that eats up some time. You can send us an email at the number 2trollsbrew@gmail.com. We get quite a few emails from other trolls like us, other people who specifically brew and they want to get our opinions and thoughts on said brew. Matthias is a regular. Matthias had an email for a while. I hope you're okay.
He's also sent in a couple lists that I had expanded upon, and I've made some decks out of his list.
Yeah, I guess we could talk about one of them here. Is this it? The Sphinx's Investigation?
Yeah.
We could probably talk about it real quickly here. Poor Daring Sleuth, Earwall Illuminator, Byway Courier, Gaff Mole, Tireless Tracker. Those are all creatures that either generate tokens, or clues, I mean, generate clues when something happens, or gain life when a clue enters the battlefield or a sacrifice they can't remember, and turns over into a pretty scary guy when a clue is sacrificed. So those are all kind of interesting creatures. Spells, Ongoing Investigation, Fleeting Memories, Sphinx's Tutelage, Underwalled Mysteries, Second Harvest, Tamio's Journal. Again, those are like tutor effects or duplicating clues, making clues. Obviously, Sphinx's Tutelage is an excellent mill card. When you can draw a card, i.e. sacrificing a clue.
Or you can take your turn.
Or whatever. Like, a lot of people don't expect you to be able to attack from both creatures and milling.
Right. Right?
Like, that's two avenues of attack in the same deck, but there's 100% synergy going towards your goal of milling somebody out. So, I don't know of every single one of these cards. I just had the picture, so I can't mouse over them all. So I might be getting some of them kind of mixed up with other ones. But I don't know. I like the idea. I think it's going to be really solid. I guess we can just take a quick second. What are you kind of brewing around with right now, Travis? What's got you hot and bothered out of this new set besides Trick Your Dickophobia?
Right. I mean, where to begin? Because there's so many different avenues of attack that you can go with now.
I mean, do you have, like, a card in particular? I guess I bring it up because I have one card in particular that I'm kind of mentally brewing around. And then I have another deck that I'm trying to flesh out to see if I can figure out how to make it go. So,
all right,
I'm curious if you have something.
Well, what's your one card?
My one card right now is Brain in the Jar.
Okay. Oh, yes. Yes.
I really think we talked about it several times on previous shows when we're like looking at the reviews or whatever, but I really think that I can make something really sick going with this. I think there's a couple of really interesting one casting cast cards. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Always here to help or troll.
I think there's some interesting ones, some really good twos, some pretty reasonable threes and excellent fours and fives. So, there's even a good six, I think it's six, that returns a card of each converted mana cost to your hand from your graveyard.
Yes.
So if you play
like
a one, a two, a three, a four, a five,
something.
I think so, something like that. So if you play a one, a two, a three, a four, a five, and a six, you can use that six to go get back 1 through 5, and then you can empty your counter, your thing in the jar, go back to 1, and start over again. I think it's very interesting. I think especially with something like... I don't know. I think there's a thing that untaps a permanent now, right? Or does it just untap creatures, the 3/3 with flash? It may just tap or untap a creature. But, like, you have a lot of interesting things that can kind of take advantage of this tap-untap mechanic that can still kind of make stuff work. So I'm kind of looking at, like, a blue-green aggressive list, maybe with a couple of control elements kind of splashed in from Nowhereville. It's kind of what I'm looking at. So, like, Jace's, the tap-untap guy, the 1/1 that becomes a 2/2 with vigilance when he damages an opponent, Kiora, some stuff like that, some interesting acceleration, plus all these really interesting sorceries to kind of, and instance, mostly sorceries that you can kind of cheat into play with a, brain in the jar on the opponent's turn.
Right. Okay, so... Yeah, going back to Matthias's idea, just milling with clues and drawing. Mm-hmm. Fleeting memories and... What is it? Trail of evidence?
Right.
And then just build... I mean, those two with... what is it? Sphinx's Tutelage... And then just have your one play set of creatures be the Erdwall Illuminator. So after those 16 cards are out of the way, your next 20 or so odd cards are just control. And then, like Trail of Evidence, when you cast an instant or sorcery, you investigate. With the Illuminator, whenever you investigate for the first time, you investigate again. Then, of course, the fleeting memories. When it enters, you investigate, and then when you sack a clue, they mill 3. So they're going to mill 3, you're going to draw 1, and if you have the tutelage on the field, they're going to mill an additional 2, maybe even 18, who knows?
Sure.
So that's one card that, one deck that I'm working on. Another one, and it's still mill, but let's go back to my mono black deck. It's self-mill.
Sure.
Fill it up with, I think it was 30 creatures. So it has 30 creatures in there, and they all have some sort of, effect where they use the graveyard for advantage. Actually, let's just make it like 26 creatures. I haven't got it down specifically yet because, I'm still brewing with it. But the end result is if you don't kill them with creatures, you kill them with Liliana's Indignation. And that is, put the top X cards of your library into your graveyard. Target player loses 2 life for each creature card put into your graveyard this way. And, obviously it's a late game thing, but now what you can do is you can either reclaim that if you accidentally mill yourself with it, or you can play, if you have it in your hand, at the end of their turn, you can play Grave Purge. And do you remember what that one does?
Is that the one that, returns 2 creatures to your hand and then you discard 1?
No. It is... Return any number of creatures from your graveyard to the top of your library.
Oh, to the top of your library.
So...
Okay. I knew it was one of the ones that, reset your...
Reset
the top of your deck.
Yeah.
Or put creatures back somewhere.
Yeah.
I think you have a lot of possibilities. How's this for making you Randy, just real quick here?
Okay.
So, you have your Girog monster, right?
Right.
And you have the twins that let you play extra lands.
Yes. Just junked good stuff.
Sure. And then you have, the white and the green enchantments, the retreats. So you're gaining life and you're making creatures, right?
Right.
And you run Brain in the Jar for like Magmatic Insight for the discard a card, draw two, the voices.
Yeah.
You may not need the white spell, the white for the making the creatures, actually. I think there's a the double regrowth still in the format. I think it is, right? It was an Origins.
Can't remember.
Restock.
I think
restock.
I think that was an Origins.
I thought that was an Origins.
Oh well, either way.
Maybe it's not. But you kind of set yourself up in the situation where I think with the Jund colors in particular, you know, there's a lot of good removal at three.
Yeah.
You know, you got all the targeted removal. So you've got good ones, you've got good twos, you got good threes. You have a really solid creature at four to kind of help get ahead. You're gaining all this life with the outpost. You're playing extra lands. You're drawing extra cards. You're spending one mana to play removal spells at sorcery speed on your opponent's turn. I think there's a lot of raw potential in here. And the more you talk about things, the more I keep going back to my list.
Right.
This Brain in the Jar, I think this Brain in the Jar is one of those cards that get your playset now because somebody's going to break it.
Right.
Right? Somebody, I picked up three of them from the shop yesterday for basically a dollar a piece from different guys just standing there. I owe everyone there a dollar. Right? Like, oh, this card is worthless. This card is going to come out of nowhere and be a $10, $15 card.
Yep.
It's just a matter of when. Right? It's just like Aether Vial. Aether Vial was out, first out, no one cared. Right? Now it's like a $6 card or whatever. Or even higher than that in some places.
Aether Vial?
I believe so.
The one where you put the creature into play?
Yes.
That's like $40.
Is it way high? I knew it was a four involved.
Yeah, it's like huge. Because obviously Modern and Legacy have a combination of elves, goblins, and merfolk that just run people over and just ruin lives.
Sure.
So, yeah, they're all right.
I mean, they're good. I gave a playset to a friend of mine because, you know, he's a friend of mine. But in my brain, they were still like $4 or $5 a piece.
When was this?
Probably 2 months ago. I'm sure I could get them back if I wanted to.
You should, or at least charge him.
I'm buying his motorcycle for like 50% of Kelly Blue Book, so it's okay.
That's all right.
I mean, give a little, get a little, right?
Yeah.
Karma, baby. It's all about the karma.
Yeah.
Okay, Travis, where was I in rolling down the end of the show notes? You can check me out at twitch.tv/SamusGarobo. I stream every day. For the most part, if you're listening to this show today or Friday or Saturday, I'll let you know on Sunday we're doing our first 12-hour stream. We're playing Dungeons & Dragons Online. We're doing all the raids. We're going up until 6 o'clock when I'll be switching over to play Pen and Paper Dungeons & Dragons. I am never going to get a kiss again from a lady.
Well, at least you're married, so...
That's true indeed. You can check us out on Twitter. I'm Samus Garobo. He is TurtlePower319. And I figured out a new strategy, Travis.
Okay.
So if you go to Twitter.com, you'll notice that they have these, like, trending hashtags.
Yeah.
Right? So, for example, last night, they had advice for Donald Trump as one of the hashtags. And today, one of the one is, let me cheer you up by, okay? So I'm just going over here, picking one basically at random, a hashtag at random, and I'm basically trolling that hashtag with our information. Or the podcast information. Or the stream information. So basically, that's my new strategy for getting more listeners, is to basically troll the hell out of people. using these hashtags of people just being dumb.
That makes sense.
I think it'll be good. I don't know if it'll actually turn into anything, but I'm going to try. So please, check us out there. I do tweet when we're going to go live on Twitch. And now that I'm more free in the evenings and Travis has got a relatively set schedule, we're trying. We're trying to figure out a time where we can get together more often. And at least do like a... maybe during the pre-release for Magic Online this weekend sometime, we can find a window to do a draft. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Or next, whatever.
Well, no, because you're doing the thing on Sunday.
We can figure it out later.
Okay, good, because...
Maybe Monday. I don't know.
Yeah, well, no, because I'm drafting on Monday.
Okay, well then, maybe on Tuesday.
That would work.
I don't know, Travis. We'll figure it out. Figure it out later. We don't need to figure this kind of stuff out live on the stream.
Sure we do.
Or live on the podcast. So, what are we playing for this week's game?
First, we're playing
all that talk.
Baker's playset.
Oh, jeez. Jeez.
I
thought I was going to skip the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
I tried so hard.
I was waiting.
All right. Tell us about a Baker's playset.
All right. So, essentially, me and some of the guys that I play with, we were at the shop trading and, you know, just going through our binders and everything. And, you know, we came to the conclusion that, you know, with EDH as a format now, you need more than a playset. You know, you're going to need that one extra card, you know, just so you can have it so you don't have to switch it in and out of sleeves and maybe forget something. And one player had suggested a, you know, Commander's playset, which, I mean, that's fine and everything, but it didn't really flow as well. And I was like, well, why not a Baker's playset, since it's just one more, just like a dozen is, you know, Baker's dozen is just one more than 12. So it's really the same thing. And, you know, we've kind of stuck with a Baker's playset. And yesterday, while we were trying to do the podcast, Samus here was explaining to me why he's wrong. And we would like your input of whether or not it should be called a Baker's playset.
Clearly not, because a Baker would infer one for quality control, which would therefore be six, right? One that never gets played and always stays in pristine condition in a collector's binder. Four for your playset for any given deck, and then one for the slot in your commander deck. So it would be six, where at that point you might as well just call it six.
Right, but, you know, when you think about it, a Baker's dozen, he has that one for quality control.
Correct.
Now, he has that one extra that it's either going to be used or it's going to be, you know, just forgotten about.
No, it's going to get used.
Oh, okay, just like a Baker's playset.
It'll get used at some point, most likely.
Just like a Baker's
playset. Because when you make a dozen of something, inevitably something is going to turn out ruined. So you would have a Baker's playset if I were to come over there and take one of your cards like out of your commander deck and just tear it up in front of you. Be like, well, it's a good thing you got your Baker's playset.
I mean, it's a good thing you have two eyes because you won't be seeing out of one of them.
Oh, all right, everybody. Let us know what you think. The number 2trolls@gmail.com, or, of course, again, at Twitter. I'm Samus Garobo. He's TurtlePower319. I don't know why I look at you. Every time I look at your picture and I see your name, Travis, staring at me on Skype, and that's just how I want to say it.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you just... Always be trolling me, bro.
It's what I do.
Always be trolling me. Stop it.
I am trying. Did it work? Did my trying to stop trolling work? I'm trying right now. I don't think it's working.
Stop trolling me.
I do not know what that means.
In the show.
I Oh, we're not playing a game?
Oh, we could play a game if you want.
Oh, I did not realize that.
All right, let's play the game. Let's go.
Okay.
I was ending the show, but let's play the game. What do you got for us this week?
Hold on.
No, I gave you lots of time.
Yeah, I know, but you know how easily distracted I am?
I know. You saw a shiny thing.
I did.
And then on your way to look at the shiny thing, you saw a different shiny thing.
Right, and really, this was...
My fault.
Your fault.
I know. I know. It's fine. I gotcha.
So, let me ask you. Yeah, well, you deserve it. Would you rather smell like manure or smell like urine?
I don't know what either of those things smell like, so I don't care.
Oh, that's right. You have a broken nose.
I have a broken nose.
Skip that one.
We should skip that one. Although I will tell you, I have smelled like both on different situations. Nobody ever has the balls to tell you to your face at the time.
Oh, I do.
It would be nice. So what's the next one? Give me a hard one.
Okay. Would you rather have ongoing wars, terrorism, and fighting in the Middle East, or kill 5 innocent children yourself if it would end all bloodshed in the Middle East forever?
I don't care what sand rats do. Next question. I'm gonna get something. I'm gonna get an earful of something. That's not true. I would like world peace, but I'm not killing people. Well, I could kill people.
I mean, it's just five.
Do
people.
I get to pick where they're at?
Sure, whatever. It's just five children.
Can I go to the Middle East and I kill them?
Kill 5 children. Well, I guess wars are over. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Sorry about those guys.
Yeah, that's right. Just, all right, what else have we
just
got?
Just kill one kid.
Give me one more.
Family's
one more.
Children.
I got to go to the gym.
Okay.
I have to go get swole.
Would you rather die a painful death that goes down in history, or die a painless death that everyone hates you for?
This is a tough one. Because on one hand, I don't like pain. I'm a pussy. On the other hand, I want to be famous
right.
for something. Like, give me an example. Like what? Like the Challenger rocket exploding. Like that had to suck, right?
Well, I mean, since it was an explosion, I feel more or less it would have been painless.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But
well,
I mean,
okay,
something
so,
like that, though, right?
So.
Like,
a painless like death like, that everyone hates you for, that, well, they don't hate him for the way he did it, but, like Hitler.
Like how he chickened out and
he
took the drugs?
Yeah. Sure, that was painless.
Yeah. I don't think I want to be like Hitler ever.
Or, so the painful death that goes down in history, right?
I guess
okay,
so. I don't want to be like Hitler ever.
So here we go. This is how you're going to die.
Okay,
all
so
right.
You have an example.
I have an example. All right.
All right.
So you are skydiving out of a plane. And
okay, never happened.
Yeah,
but okay.
Exactly. Well,
I want to be brave enough to do this.
It's going
okay.
down in history, so it's happening right now.
Okay.
All right.
I'm free falling.
All right, so you're skydiving out of an airplane.
Woo!
Your parachute isn't working. People see this.
Well, as expected.
People see this. And they're on the ground, and it's hunting season, and they all have crossbows. So they're all shooting their crossbows in the air, and they hit you like 8-9 times, but the whole time you're still screaming as you're plummeting to your death.
Okay.
And as you hit the ground, you survive. So all of these crossbows come out of your body, you know, through the other end, obviously, because they stuck inside of you. But you hit the ground, and then they shot out your back.
Okay.
All right.
No problems.
Then they take you to the hospital. On the way there, the ambulance flips.
Sure. As they do.
Yeah, as, you know, as common practice amongst ambulances.
Right.
Now as it's rolling, there's a cliff. And then you just tumble down the cliff, and the whole time you're feeling all of this. and then you die.
So what makes me loved in this scenario?
There is nothing about being loved. It's just going down in history.
Oh. It's okay.
Die a painful death that goes down in history, or die a painless death that everyone hates you for. Nobody's going to love you. They're just going to remember how awful your death was.
I thought, okay. I mean, seems fine. Like, because you'd be in shock that whole time. Like, as soon as you know that the parachute's not going to go, you're going to go right in shock. That's why they have to, they train so hard to get people to go for the second chute, because you go into shock when the first chute doesn't pop.
I guess.
I mean, because when you start to go into shock, your brain just basically shuts off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be fine. I'll take that. Take that anytime. Oh, I'm so sore already.
I feel
like there's dozens of crossbows already in my shoulders.
Right. I feel like, you know, getting shot with the crossbows would, like, wake you up out of shock. Like, oh, crap, I'm no longer free-falling. I'm being shot at by all these...
To be fair, I've also never been shot with a crossbow.
I can only assume it's going to hurt. And that's why we started making guns.
You can't be worse than the shotgun or the pistol.
I think it'd be a lot worse.
Or the blowgun.
Oh, blow dart. Those things don't hurt.
I mean...
I've been shot with one of them.
They can if it's a barbed blow dart.
I got shot once. It wasn't... I mean, it sucked,
I mean,
but it wasn't that bad.
Shot a couple of times. That's okay. You just dig the bullet out and you keep going.
Well...
I mean, I haven't been shot by, like, a 9mm or anything. Let's not make it sound like I'm trying to sound awesome. I've been shot by a 22, and I've been shot by, you know, some shotguns during, you know, pheasant season. Not super, super close range, but far enough away that you're digging out, you know, with the needle-nose pliers.
Right.
Buckshot. Or not buckshot, birdshot or whatever. So I don't want it to make it sound like I'm too awesome. But, yeah, you just dig the bullets out and you just move on. But that, if you can get a good inch and a half of barbed blowgun in there, that shit hurts coming out.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, folks. Hopefully you won't get shot by a ninja on your way to the hospital after a freak parachuting accident during crossbow hunting season.
Yep.
Where people decide that they're going to take you down while still in midair, as they do.
It's something that happens.
Hey! I just hope that doesn't happen to any of our beautiful listeners.
You know that they're beautiful?
They're all gorgeous. They're smart. They're highly intelligent people for listening to this show.
Well, they may be intelligent, but that doesn't mean they're beautiful.
They're very beautiful. I love each and every one of you deeply. 8 to 10 inches of deepness.
He's talking about snow.
Yes.
Yeah, so troll on.
Troll on, everybody.